It's a Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from holidays of radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, part two of a two-hour command performance Christmas special produced by the Armed Forces Radio Service and heard exclusively by the men and women fighting overseas during the Second World War on December 25th, 1944.
Men, we've pushed a couple of magic buttons you're always hearing about in the radio world, and we have some new and mighty fine people hanging from the old fir tree. Right now, you're going to hear from one of Command Performance's old standbys, a man who has devoted his time these past few years to your entertainment welfare. It's the old Fess himself, Kay Kaiser.
Evening, folks. Hiya.
Well, evening, Kay. How y'all? Just being the Christmas show, I'm just trying to capture the all-tide spirit, you know. By the way, Kay, I've been here now for about an hour. Would you mind terribly if I went out and grabbed a sandwich?
How long will it take you?
Well, a ham sandwich will take me 5 minutes, a cheese sandwich will take me about 10 minutes, and a bologna sandwich will take me 15 minutes.
Go and grab yourself a triple decker.
I love that boy.
Meantime, men, here's a tune that ought to lead itself a little U-tied heel and toe work. Let's all get in the spirit and, yes, dance with the dolly with the hole in her stocking with Sassy Sally Mason. Yes, sir.
As I was walking down the street, down the street, down the street, I met somebody who was mighty sweet, mighty, mighty fantasy. I asked her, would she like to have a talk, make some talk, all the fellas standing on the wall, wishing they were me. Oh, mama, mama, let me dress up tonight, dress up tonight, dress up tonight. Got a little secret, gonna dress up tonight, I'm gonna dance by the light of the moon. I'm on the dance with the dolly, with the hole in the stocking, while the knees keep a knocking, and toes keep a rocking. Dance with the dolly, with the hole in the stocking, dance right by the lighting of the moon. Dolly with the hole in the stocking, while the knees keep a knocking and toes keep a rocking. Dance with Dolly with the hole in the stocking. Gonna dance, gonna dance, by the light and all that silvery moon.
Well, gentlemen of the AEF, here's a young lady who's traveled many thousands of miles to entertain you. She really deserves a niche in that good old G.I. Hall of Fame. Men, a Christmas command performance for Frances Langfoot.
Thanks, Kay, and Christmas greetings, fellas. It's customary to answer the request you write in, and this is no time to break an old custom. So regards to everybody at Navy 232, D.L. Swanson and all at 726. Scoop, Uncle, and Leroy, Navy 152. Also, so do the cats. Ralph and the homesick Seabees with the 72nd, the gang and hut 261, Van the Flying Dutchman, Ray the Yankee Clipper, Mig the Whap, Rube the Swede, Ken the Shoplifter, and Jelly Belly O'Connor. The whole gang at 464. And all of you who have taken the trouble to drop me a line during the year.
Thanks a lot, Franny. That was swell. Well, fellas, every week, Command Performance is snowed under with a flock of requests for the familiar sounds of home. All kinds of sounds. The neighbor's piano, sliver horn, the 5 o'clock whistle, a girl saying no. All the sounds of home. Why, only yesterday a sergeant in Honolulu asked us if he could hear someone giving his mother-in-law a hot foot. Well, naturally, we can't do that because there's no smoking in this theater. But what we are going to do is take a GI in New Guinea and let him listen to the sounds of his typical day back home when he was a good old civilian in Middletown, USA. Then he got up at 7 a.m. in those days, the loafer. And this was the first sound you would have heard in his bedroom. But, of course, Joe finally did get up. And after he'd sleepily dressed himself, he groped his way to the bathroom where he gave himself a thorough washing. At 8:30, he arrives at the corner filling station where he works as an attendant. And a few minutes later comes in his first customer.
Yes, sir. Fill her up.
Well, you don't hear that anymore, fellas. Later that morning at work, Joe gets word that his aunt has been taken suddenly ill. And early that afternoon, we find him at the hospital visiting her.
Scorecard here. Get your scorecard here. You can't tell one player without another scorecard here.
Peanuts, Cracker Jack, chewing gum. Peanuts, Cracker Jack, chewing gum.
Yes, chewing gum. You don't hear that anymore either, fellas. Well, it's a great game, and Joe enjoys every inning of it. His Dodgers are behind by a run as they come to bat for the last half of the ninth. But the bases are full with two out, and their slugger is up.
It's 3-2 on the batter. Here's the windup. The pitch. There it goes! There it goes! There it goes! Yeah, there goes the ball game. He struck out.
And so Joe disconsolately wends his way home. A bit thirsty, he pours himself a glass of milk. Hey. Just a minute, I said milk.
Whose day is this, yours or mine?
Oh, beg pardon. Well, it's after dinner now, and Joe has a date. Yes, just a boy and girl in the good old days. And all Joe wants are the simple little pleasures he loves so dearly.
Cut it out, wise guy.
I see, and that's the saga of Joe. The sound story of a GI before he became government issue. Night finds him once more, just as we met him this morning. Ah, well. Sleep well, Joe. Pleasant dreams. Yes, you're going to need pleasant dreams, Joe. Because when the mailman comes tomorrow morning, boy, are you going to get some greetings. Thanks a lot. You know, our next guest on this little mistletoe taffy pull is one of the most glamorous girls in Hollywood. Yes, sir. Years ago, a girl had to have it. Then it went out of fashion, and a girl had to have After came, well, whatever it is, she's got it, brother. The gorvacious Dorothy L'Amour. fellas, while she was singing, I figured out what she's got. It's oomph, it, and particularly boing. No, seriously, Dorothy, that was lovely. Almost as pretty as you are, Dorothy.
Well, thank you, Kay.
You know, Dorothy, I can't understand why you've never asked me to, you know, never asked to have me in one of those romantic pictures of yours. You knew I was available, didn't you?
Yes, I did, Kay. But there just hasn't been a part to fit you.
Well, why couldn't I have been in that last picture you made called Rainbow Island?
But that was a story where a man and I were cast away all alone on a desert island.
Gee, I'd have liked that. On that island, we couldn't have anything to do all day but tell each other how beautiful we are.
Well, that leaves me with no dialogue.
Oh, I suppose you're going to tell me that Bob Hope is more of a lover type than I am.
Well, you'd be surprised about Bob. He and I have had some wonderful... love scenes. Wonderful,
huh?
Love scenes. In one picture, it was very romantic. He drew me into his arms and then I looked up and there was a beautiful crescent-shaped moon.
That was Hope's nose.
Kay, you shouldn't talk about Bob like that.
And why not? I don't know what you can see in a guy like him. What a phony. Where's the glamour? Where's the romance? Where's the good look?
Hello, Dorothy.
Where's the exit? Now, look, Bob, I got a great idea for your next road picture.
I'm saying about
it. It'll be about my hometown. Now, we'll call it The Road to Rocky Mount, Bolweevil County, North Carolina.
That's 20 minutes of the picture right there.
Now, Bob, I'll be the star, and it's all about me. Now, in the first scene, I'm reading a letter from my folks, and it says, "Come on home, Kay. All is forgiven."
Even your radio program? Look, LSMFT, is Dorothy in this super... is Dorothy in this super epic?
Why, sure, she's what gave me the idea. You know, Miss Lemoore is a lot like the state of Carolina. Take her eyes. That's the blue sky. And her shoulders, that's the curve of the coastline. And her sarong,
that's the solid south.
Well, let's get back to the picture. Now, the road to North Carolina. We start out, and after we've gone a few miles, we make a little detour.
Detour?
Yeah, we have to go around a big sack of tobacco. Then a little farther on, we come to another stack of tobacco.
Look, couldn't we come across a pile of irium somewhere in here? Let's not be selfish. I've got to live too, you know.
Okay, now we keep on going, and suddenly when we turn a corner, we see a big lump in the middle of the road.
I knew we'd come to Crosby sooner or later.
Yes, Bob.
Don't kick it. It may be a relative. Go ahead.
Yes, Bob. Sounds like all yours are here tonight. Yes, Bob, it's Bing, all right, and we pick him up because he's worried.
Well, he ought to be. With four kids, it's a long way between service stations. Free ones.
Oh, well. I can see you're not going to be serious about my road picture. So I'm going to take the liberty of introducing our next guest. Men, here's one of the brightest guys ever to unload his talent in Tin Pan Alley. His list of hits looks like the box score of a game between South Chicago and Gary, Indiana. He represents the jive element on your Christmas party. Spell it backwards, it's Yin Hodge Direct Rim. But the old-fashioned way, here's Johnny Mercer.
Thanks, Ken. A slick old Christmas to you all, men. All year long, I've been coming on these shows singing my own songs. So I thought, seeing as how this is Christmas and I want you to enjoy yourselves, I'd sing somebody else's. Grab a mitt full of is you is or is you et cetera. I got a gal who's always late anytime we have a date, but I love her. Yes, I love her. I'm gonna walk up to her gate, see if I can't get it straight, 'cause I want her. I'm gonna ask her, is you is or is you ain't my baby? The way you're acting lately makes me doubt. You is still my baby, baby. But it seems my flame in your heart done gone out. Now a woman is a creature that has always been strange. When you're sure of one, you find she's gone and made a change. Is you is or is you ain't my baby? Maybe baby's found somebody new. Oh, is my baby still my baby true?
Thanks a lot, Johnny Mercer. Say, fellas, although our next guest isn't going to sing, believe me, he really has something to sing about. About the way his boys all over the world are fighting and winning. Yep, this man has a lot of men that he wants to say Merry Christmas to all you men in the armed forces. With sort of a special hello to his own boys in the Navy, the Coast Guard, and the Marines. I'm mighty proud and happy to have a word from the Honorable James Forrestal, Secretary of the Navy.
I know that Christmas means one thing above all to you who are serving overseas, home. Yet once again, Christmas finds most of the men and women of the services separated from their families. This year, however, you overseas and we at home are united by hope and determination. Our hope springs from our ability to see at last what the end of this catastrophe certainly shall be. Victory will be ours. Our determination is that your efforts shall not be in vain, and that the evil forces shall not again be permitted to roll across the face of the earth after your victory has been achieved. Until then, we want you to know that you are very much in our hearts and our thoughts on this Christmas day, as on every day that you are away. For the new year, we join with you in wishing for our country the finest gift of all, victory and a peace which shall endure.
Fellas, our next guest is so important that no one man can introduce him, so I've asked Fred Allen to return to the microphone and help me. Start it off, Fred.
All right, Bob. You know, gang, we've been rummaging around in the command performance mailbag, and we've found lots of requests for W.C. Fields.
Yeah, especially around the holiday season with New Year's Eve. I didn't think, Your Honor. How did they hide that joke on me? Now from APO 704 comes a letter signed Puddin' Puddin' Souders, Mick the Chick, Shotgun Sipes, and Wino the Wolf.
And so for those guys and all the others, Mr. W.C. Fields. Mr. W.C.
Thank you, Bob Hope. And thank you. Now I'll start to read the line. Yeah, I said that, didn't I? Throughout the Middle Ages, the use of liquor was universal, and drunkenness was so common, it was unnoticed. They called it the Middle Ages because no one was able to walk home unless they were between two other fellows. I was the middle guy. Now, before I go any further, please do not labor under the misconception that I always have been a teetotaler. In my younger days, I was prone to take a nip. I chortle now at that former weakness in my otherwise strong character. But how well I remember my first encounter with the devil's brew. I happened to stumble across a typographical error. I happened to stumble across a case of bourbon and went right on stumbling for several days thereafter. Of course, now I touch nothing stronger than buttermilk. 90 proof buttermilk. I look on my days of revelry with scorn and reproachment and shudder. When I recall going to the corner saloon, tugging at my daddy's coattails and saying, "Father, dear father, come home with me now and bring a jug with you." However, I came from a very illustrious family. My great-grandfather was a friend of Benjamin Franklin. In fact, my great-grandfather would have discovered electricity, but he was too poor to buy a kite. He had to go out and hire one. I got a picture of him at home, standing in front of the town tavern. He was hiring a kite. Much higher. Now, many of you in the audience are giggling and scoffing and saying that I have given up strong drink only because the stuff is so hard to get nowadays. But you are in error. My basement is loaded. As I am. A pickpocket I once converted told me they have a school in Chicago, ill, short for Illinois. A pocket picking school. And the beginning rule they teach is no stimulants. They have to keep their heads clear and their fingers nimble. Why, friends, you set a bucket of beer in front of a pig, and he'll grunt and walk away. So should you. Or would you rather be a duck? Back in my rummy days, I would tremble and shake for hours upon arising. It was the only exercise I got. Now, don't say you can't swear off drinking. It's easy. I've done it 1,000 times. In closing, I would like to offer my own favorite recipe to take the place of intoxicants. It's a real thirst quencher. It's called the Raspberry Freeze. Known in England as the Raspberry Freeze. Take 1 cup of pineapple juice, 2 cups of raspberry juice, 1 cup of black tea, 3 cups of water, and 2 egg whites. Freeze until half stiff. Well, when you're half stiff, everything is all right. I thank you.
It's a great pleasure at this time to introduce to you one of the greatest actors I've ever known. And incidentally, a swell fellow. Here he is, Spencer Tracy.
Thanks, Bob. Christmas greetings, gang. I ran across a story the other day by Charles Tazwell. I think you'll enjoy it. With the help of such sterling actors as Lee J. Cobb, Skippy Hohmeyer, Griff Burnett, Howard Duff, Harry Bartell, and Elliot Lewis, I'd like to tell you about it. If you please, Major Vogt.
The same winter sun that dances on the winter snows up north sprawls indolently at ease in the thick white dust of El Camino del Norte, Old Mexico. An old man, lean and ancient, his cheeks ripe with holly berries from the heat, has paused to rest in the cool, dripping shade of a pepper tree and has dropped off to sleep, a habit of the very old. He's suddenly awakened by the shrill voice of Pablo, aged 10, who stands with bare, brown legs wide apart in the center of the road and bitterly addresses a small, discouraged, disreputable donkey.
A donkey, you call yourself, Estupido? A fine animal with 4 stout legs on each corner, a most splendid tail to shoo off the flies, and a most handsome head stuck on the front to point the way you're going. I see. And what use do you make of this excellent equipment the good God has given you? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You are a disgrace to all the donkeys of Mexico, of all the world, of all...
Pablo.
See? Oh, buenos dias, padre.
Whatever is the trouble, young one? What has the poor beast done that you should be so angry?
But nothing.
Well, then why do you...
And that is all he wants to do, ever. Here it is, but 2 days until Christmas, when a load of wood could be sold in the village to buy gifts and a candle. But does that matter to this one? No. He cares for nothing but nothing.
Well, a donkey's a donkey, Pablo. They're all the same.
But why? Why of all beasts should a donkey be so stubborn?
Stubborn? Oh, no, Pablo, that's wrong.
But...
I know everyone says they are. They curse them and belabor their backs with sticks and call them stupid. But that's because they don't know the truth about little donkeys.
The truth?
Yes. It's really not stubbornness, but pride that makes small donkeys so aloof. No wind, sun, rain, pain, or adversity can touch them. You see, their pride is a shield against all the discomforts man or the elements can offer.
What has a donkey to be proud of?
Oh, a great deal, Pablo. A very long time ago, a great honor came to one of them. An honor so great that it lifted him and all his descendants to an exalted place. A place that you or I or all the world might envy. And ever since that time, every small donkey has been content to stand and drowse in the sun or shade. For he alone, of all animals, of all men, has already fulfilled his destiny.
His destiny, senor?
Yes. You see, once upon a time, there was a small donkey. He was 14 unhappy years old, and he had worked hard and long for at least twice 14 masters. He was battered and scarred and presented a most distressful appearance. His tail was naught but a piece of limp rope unraveled down at the end. One of his ears stood straight up like a cactus plant, while the other hung drooping like a wilted cabbage leaf. His off hind leg had a decided stiffness. They called him the small one. His latest master was a woodcutter who also owned four younger and therefore stronger donkeys. But small one was the special charge of the woodcutter's son. It was the boy who saw to it that small one always had a dry straw for his bed and that the load of wood to be carried to the town was not too heavy for small one's aging back. But one day, the woodcutter called his son to him and said,
Son?
Yes, Father?
I have a task for you to do in the town, son.
A load of wood?
No. No, I wish you to take the old donkey, the one you call the small one, to a shop just inside the town gate. I have already spoken to the owner. He will give you one piece of silver in exchange for the beast.
You mean... You don't mean you're going to sell small one?
He can no longer do his share of the work. Even when carrying half the load the other donkeys carry, his worn-out legs tremble and his sides work like a bellows.
But he'll be strong as the other soon. You wait and see. Give him but a few weeks.
Enough.
And...
An old donkey is of little use. One day he might drop dead on us up in the hills, a total loss. Better to take a piece of silver and say good riddance to the beast. You will start at once, you hear?
Yes. Yes, Father.
The shop you will take him to is the second on the left as you pass through the town gate.
The second? But that's the tanner's.
And what of that? The small one's hide is old, but it will make good leather.
But he's been faithful. He's worked hard. He's done his best. You can't sell him to the tanner's to be killed.
Come now. I'll have no tears. No crying over a miserable donkey. Hurry, be off with you. And take good care not to lose that piece of silver on the way home.
And so Pablo, the small boy and the small donkey, began their sorrowful journey into town. The boy was heartbroken and cried for a while. Then he tried desperately to think of some way to save his friend. The sound of the small one's hoofs on the road seemed to say over and over again, going to the tanner's, going to the tanner's. Suddenly it came to the boy's mind that there was a horse market in the town. If he could sell small one to some new and kind master, the little donkey would still live, and yet the father would also have his piece of silver. Well, it was early afternoon when the boy and small one passed through the town gates and down the narrow, twisted streets to the marketplace.
Eighty-three is the bid. Do I hear more? No? 83 once? 83 twice? 83! Sold for 83 pieces of silver. You made a fine bargain, my friend. Now, who has the next animal for sale? Step up.
Please, sir, would you try to sell the small donkey?
Go away, boy.
But he's a very valuable animal. He's not nearly as old as he looks, and that's just because he works so hard. And the ear, the one that doesn't stand up straight as a donkey should, that was the fault of a careless master, not his own. And he's terribly strong, and he eats very little.
Now, this is a horse market, boy. We've no time to waste on donkeys.
But a small donkey would take such a small time.
right, my boy. If you insist. My friend, a great bargain I have to offer you. The proud owner terms it the donkey. But it appears to me to be an animated pile of shaking bones. you can see how the moths have been at the hide. And the is that a tail? Or is it a stub of broom worn out from sweeping the courtyard? A true museum piece, my friend. Moldy with age and loose in the joint.
He's not!
All right. Boy, take care, donkey. Move along. We've got business to attend to. Hurry up, please. Now that we've had our fun, dispose of the king's donkey, my friend. I want to call your attention to these two fine Arab steeds. Did you ever see such fine animals offered for sale before? We'll start with a bid.
And so the boy and the little beast left the marketplace, Pablo. The hours were slipping swiftly by, and the boy knew he must soon start for home, and that he must have the piece of silver to give to his father. He tried stopping people on the street. He inquired from door to door, but no one desired to buy a small, tired donkey. The sun was sinking fast when he came at last back to the town gates and stood before the tanner's door. The boy's face was tear-streaked, and the small one's head drooped so low that his limp ear almost touched the ground. The boy said goodbye to his small friend and asked forgiveness for what he had to do. And there was understanding in the little donkey's eyes. Then, just as the boy was lifting the latch of the tanner's door, a voice spoke to him.
My son.
Yes, sir?
I have a great favor to ask. Are you the owner of that small donkey?
Oh, yes, sir.
I have a long journey to make, and my wife is not well. I have great need of a strong, gentle animal to carry her safely.
Oh, the small one is very strong and very trustworthy.
Yes, I can see. Would you sell him to me?
Yes. Oh, yes, sir. For but one piece of silver.
One piece of silver?
Is that too much, sir?
Too much? Oh, no. A very reasonable price. It's such a beautiful one.
He's not very beautiful, but he is good.
Yes, I can see that. I'll be kind to him as long as he
lives. Then he'll work hard to please you.
Here's a piece of silver. I'm small.
Do you mind? Do you mind if I come as far as the town gate? You see, small one and I are...
Not at all. Don't want to say goodbye to him, of course. You can do that while I see my wife safely on his back. Here we are. Easy, small one.
Goodbye, small one. You must be very faithful, and it isn't forever, you know. I'll buy you back, and you'll have a fine stable and nothing to do at all but sleep and eat. Won't that be nice, small one?
All right, my son. We're ready to go.
Wait, traveler.
Yes, soldier.
I must make out the record before you can pass through the town gates. Who are you?
My name is Joseph.
And your wife?
They call her Mary.
Your destination?
Is Bethlehem.
Pass.
Come, small one.
Bye, son.
Goodbye. Goodbye, small one. Be gentle and sure of foot and carry her safe to Bethlehem.
And so, Pablo, the small one traveled the many weary miles to Bethlehem. And there in a stable,
which became a king's stable. He saw a king born, a king of men, of centuries, of life, of death. Yes, the small one's tired old eyes saw the shepherds and the wise men who came to pay homage to his small master. And he heard the voices of angels rejoicing, singing the very same notes his hoofs had rung out on the stones of the road. Then it came to pass that all those who had laughed at his ragged coat, his limping gait, his drooping ear, they all envied the small one, for he was part of a great miracle. That was a long, long time ago, Pablo, my son. But today all small donkeys stand and dream, especially at Christmas time. They dream of the small one of Bethlehem.
Christmas, 1944. Once again, America is singing the carols of Christmas, and Command Performance brings you home for the carols you've always loved. Judy, Frances, Dinah, Virginia, Dorothy, Ginny, and the Ken Darby Chorus are at the mic ready to sing them for you.
Christmas many miles from home this year, around Saipan, Guam, Kwajalein, Guadalcanal, Lemuria, the New Guinea jungles, where you'll miss the deep snow and the bare trees and the faint sound of carols coming from the little red brick church just down the street. Here's Judy Garland to give you a bit of one of the carols you'd surely hear.
Probably listening to the expeditionary station at Port Moresby right now, or Tarawa, Tehran, Awaz, Natal, Assam, Yorhat, or Gaya, on the CBI area. Well, Ginny Sims wants to sing a bit of a carol that is probably being sung at this very minute by some of your old friends or your sweetheart, back in Columbus, in Philadelphia, and in Dallas. Ginny?
Shepherds in fields as they lay.
men who man the cargo ships, the men of war spread over the seven seas, few men in landing barges and submarines, you CBs and dock workers whose muscles sing with the work of victory, you men listening at Attu, Sitka, and Dutch Harbor, here's Virginia O'Brien saying,
God rest you merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
Christmas greetings to Jamaica, Georgetown, British Guiana, Khartoum. And all of you listening to the AES in New Delhi, on the continent, the 5th Army Mobile Unit in Chungking, here's Dottie L'Amour.
Deck the halls of boughs of holly. Tis the season to be jolly. Don we now our gay apparel.
You men in Iceland, Newfoundland, the air transport gang, you crews of our mighty air fleet, you engineers, ordnance men, radio men, from Corsica to Munda, here's a bit of a carol from Francis Langford, just as you will remember it from so many previous Christmas days.
It came upon the midnight clear, that glorious song of old, from angels bending near the earth to touch their hearts of gold. Peace on the earth, goodwill to men, from hands all precious king. The
now, fellas, Francis,
Virginia,
Dottie, Jenny, Diana,
and Judy, join the many voices of the Ken Darby Chorus in singing the carol we hope to be singing with you next time this year at this time.
Church bells which proclaim Christmas 1944 ring out clear and free in the towns and villages and cities of America. But that sound travels a long way this year of our Lord 1944. We are shaping tomorrow, a sure tomorrow, a good tomorrow, when all men will be brothers. This is home calling, the hearts of 132 million Americans calling. It says something very simple and very old, love from home. And Merry Christmas.
Christmas
Carpenter speaking for the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Command Performance on Tuned to Yesterday from Christmas Day 1944, an Armed Forces Radio Service recording. And that wraps it up for this Christmas edition of Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Happy holidays.